For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to have giving the talk this evening Hoketsu Lori Belzer. Hoketsu is one of the founders of Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. She's now our sewing teacher for sewing Buddha's robes and also a member of the board. And Hoketsu was also Shuso, head student, head monk at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center recently. So,
good evening, Bodhisattvas. Thank you, Taigen, for your kind words. Thank you very much for coming out on this beautiful summer night to share the Dharma together for the benefit of all beings. I have heard that there's been an auspicious event occurring here at Ancient Dragon on Monday nights. I've heard that Taigen has begun the long journey of teaching from the Book of Serenity. Is that true? Okay. Oh, okay. And how far along are you guys?
Sunday I'll be doing case 3.
Ah, so you're really moving at quite a clip. I think that some people teach it for a decade or more. So buckle your seatbelts. So you probably, has everyone here heard some intro to the Book of Serenity? I'll just give you a quick recap, right? So this lovely tome, the Book of Serenity, is a collection of 100 Zen stories collected by our venerable ancestor, Hongzhi, bless you. So Hongzhi compiled these stories in maybe like the 13th century in China and collected them and wrote verse commentaries on them. And then another amazing person, Wansong, arranged and expanded this collection at the request of a lay student, Ye Lu, who happened to be a government official sent off to the distant lands in Mongolia and to serve under, Genghis Khan or some government like that. So maybe Taigen's writing these commentaries, or speaking these commentaries, so maybe some government official will request such a thing from you. One can only hope in these dark times. So I have to say that I'm personally really profoundly grateful to Taigen for teaching this Dharma of the Book of Serenity, and I have learned from him over these many years. So I thought I might scratch the surface of one of the cases with you, case 67. So you have a few weeks before you'll get to it. And you might think of me as like kind of a warm-up band for the master. For the big act. And I thought before I read the case even, it does turn out that Taigen has written his own commentary, his own verse commentary after our great ancestor Hongzhi. Taigen had the temerity to do such a thing with his teacher and his Dharma companions who studied this at Green Gulch Farm together for many years. So here's Tigan's commentary on case 67, which is called the Flower Ornament Scriptures, or Sutras, Wisdom. So, wisdom and virtues are all-pervading. Every single soul fully endowed. Opening up the nature source, old Jiaozhou has never been mystified, but blocked resolutely by false notions and attachments. How amazing that confused folks can't just get up and dance. And wallowing in sorrow, don't dare behold their eyeballs. Thus, noble caring Buddhas are moved to melodious talk, sharing inner dignity, kindness deep inside the upright rock. Let everyone know. Just chew through and swallow your own vegetable stalk. So, that's Tigan. So thank you for not just this commentary, but many that you, I'm sure, will have on this wonderful case. And I thought maybe we could unfold a bit of this case together. And I'll come back to the vegetable stalk. And we can just explore. See, this Zen is performance art, too, so feel free, Tigan. Wave that stalk. Swallow it. Can I have a bite, please? So here's the case, Bodhisattvas. Interesting case, actually. Case 67, the Flower Ornament Scripture's Wisdom. Here's the case. The Flower Ornament Scripture says, I now see that all sentient beings everywhere are fully endowed with the wisdom and virtues of the Tathagatas. But because of false conceptions and attachments, they do not realize it. And here's Huang Zhi's verse. This is already too much to talk about tonight, but I can't help myself. Somehow, years of studying with you, Tigan, have encouraged me to speak ad nauseum. So here's Huang Zhi's verse. Sky covers, earth bears, making a mass, making a clump, pervading the universe without bound, breaking down the subatomic particles with no inside, getting to the end of the mysterious subtlety. Who distinguishes turning towards or turning away? Who does that? Buddhas and ancestors come to pay the debt for what they said. Ask old teacher Wang of Nanchuan. Each person eats just one stalk of vegetable. So, take a few lifetimes to chew on that. But I think, you know, in starting and working with cases like this, I just thought I'd share a little of my process and maybe encourage you to nibble on the vegetable stalk. One thing I thought's interesting about this case, a lot of these cases are dialogues. This goes straight, there's no dialogue here. It's a clear, clear statement that everyone is already just fine, just as they are. But due to this little problem, maybe of false conceptions or habits, they could use a little improvement. Every being, without exception, is fully endowed with the virtue and wisdom of Buddhas, of enlightened ones. So there's no separation. Now, I don't know, but I seem to think there is one sometimes. So in approaching something, a teaching, a deep teaching like this, I apply a little formula. And that formula goes like this. I listen to that teaching. All sentient beings everywhere are fully endowed with the wisdom and virtues of the Tathagatas. I listen to it and listen to it. I read it. I try to remember it. Try to practice it. So the question would be, what is the practice of this? All sentient beings everywhere are fully endowed with the wisdom and the virtues of the Tathagatas. All beings everywhere. Then practice with it, practice with it, practice with it. And then maybe emanate it, transmit it. That could be write your own commentary. So this is something you have to make your own. Another way you could talk about practicing with something like this is that word, that little phrase by Hong Zhe, I believe, in Cultivating the Empty Field, roam and play in samadhi with these kinds of teachings. So contemplating, remembering, practicing, this is eating your own stalk of vegetable or tasting the truth of the Tathagata's words. What's that taste like? I know sometimes I'm like, it doesn't taste very good. I don't want to really believe that all beings everywhere, without exception, are fully endowed with the virtue and wisdom of the Buddhas. Sometimes there's resistance to that. That could arise in many different ways. So sometimes it's good to taste the lack of realization in order to realize and express Buddha, your sense of Buddha, your Buddha being. So there's not a single thing. Because I think of sentient beings, maybe this isn't technically correct from, you know, some Sanskrit derivation, but I think that everything is sentient. Rocks, trees, walls, tiles, pebbles. That there's not a single thing this sutra implies that does not deserve our love and devotion, our honor and respect. You know, this beautiful piece of wood, this kind of shabby microphone. The dust lingering in our zendo. And I believe I fall short in realizing that at times. I know about you. So I think of our practice a little bit of like foraging. Like in Zazen, whether we're sitting, standing, walking, lying down, cooking dinner, surfing the internet, having a tantrum. But this foraging, this kind of sifting through the thickets and forests and bracken is the sort of our project, right? So I'm encouraging you that this is an encouragement to study the self. Study your habits, study the lack of realization, and also study maybe where you actually do have this deep, mysterious feeling of oneness and wholeness, and I would say a deep expression of love for this world, which really needs it from us. You know, this way of practicing is to study and contemplate the conditions of our lives that separate us from this ability to express love and compassion and understanding. you know, we feel that. It feels painful. I think almost everybody sitting here is because you felt that gap between these words, that all sentient beings everywhere are fully endowed with the wisdom and virtues of the Tathagatas. But something gets in the way from us realizing it. And there's something about the very inhabiting that gap and seeing how it comes about that frees us from it and closes it and brings us close. Sometimes that happens. So, could stop there, but I won't. One thing to study that arises that creates this gap has to do with our favorites, habits of attraction and aversion. So wanting something and pushing away other things. And I think a little bit about studying this gap. Recently, a good Dharma friend said something to me that was funny and speaks about this process in daily life. So he told me he went to a concert, and he was very excited to go to a concert. So he had great seats. He, like, called ahead of time and got some really great seats. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, you know, like you're looking for it. I've got these, like, great seats to a concert. And when he arrived and was led to the seats, they were not the seats he was expecting. As a matter of fact, they were terrible seats. And he looked at his ticket and looked at the person showing them the seats, the usher, I guess, and looked, and the actual tickets were the seats that he was sitting in, right? So here's this sweet Dharma practitioner who is, like, really dismayed, and is like, these can't be my seats. What do you mean? You know? He's, like, arguing with the usher. What do you mean? Can't be my seats. Then he's grumpily sitting down, you know, probably embarrassing his companion. And, you know, he said, you know, it took me a lot of energy for me not to just walk out. I was so mad. You know, I was like in this bad place. I'm not going to hear. I can't see, you know. And in the middle of this, he started laughing and said, I just realized, like, I was making up this whole scenario, you know, trying to get a different seat instead of just being with the seat I have. He said, actually, I said, you know, I started to pay attention to the concert, and it actually was a good concert, and I had a good time. But these are the kind of perfect situations, you know, of not having the seat that you were expecting or wanting. And I think we're actually right now sitting in some pretty uncomfortable seats in America right now. You know, I mean, everybody seems to be a little bit uncomfortable with the seat they've been given, even the people who appear to have wanted those seats. Good luck with that. So we're in a great, great time to practice, and I don't want you to feel guilty or kind of hung up that if you don't like your seats or your seat in the Zendo or, you know, our president, that, like, you know, you're a bad Dharma practitioner. You're actually good if you start to realize it. This is realizing enlightenment, actually. It's, you know, being enlightened about your delusion. So I think that it's only through this kind of clarification of this gap in our experience that we can actually start to study these conditions and compassionately act from a place of wholeness and non-separation. And that place of seeing that all sentient beings everywhere, without exception, are fully endowed with the virtue and wisdom of the universe of Buddha. So just a tiny you know, sidebar. Let me see how much time I have. I actually have a few minutes, right, before we can talk. So this case actually originates from this ancient text called the Flower Ornament Sutra. You know, it's my favorite, one of my favorites. And I was like, where does this come from? You know, where does it say that in the Flower Ornament Sutra? It says so many things in the Flower Ornament Sutra. So it actually turns out that in a chapter in the Flower Ornament Sutra that is being Samantabhadra, the bodhisattva of awakened activity, you could say our activist bodhisattva. I think that's Samantabhadra on the altar. Is that? Or is it Manjushri? Sorry, it looks like him. Okay. Close enough. But you know how their bodhisattvas are sitting on some kind of seat or animal, and they're ready to jump up and start to, like, be helpful. So, you know, I think that's also interesting. I'm sure they kind of like their seats, but they're ready to, like, give that up to go and help people out. So anyway, Samantabhadra is speaking here sort of as a proxy for Buddha. And I thought I'll just read you a little bit from here where this comes from, if I can make sure I find it. Correct spot. This is so good. Similarly, the knowledge of Buddha, infinite and unobstructed, universally able to benefit all, is fully inherent in the bodies of sentient beings. But the ignorant, which basically means us, because of clinging to deluded notions, do not know of it, are not aware of it, and so do not appear to benefit from it. The Buddha, with clear eyes of knowledge, observes all sentient beings in the cosmos and says, how strange, how is it that these sentient beings have the knowledge of Buddha, but in their folly and confusion do not know it or perceive it? I should teach them the way of sages and cause them forever to shed deluded notions and attachments so they can see in their own bodies the vast knowledge of Buddhas, no different from the Buddha. The Buddha teaches them the practice of the way of the sages, so they get rid of deluded notions, after which, this is the best part, they realize the infinite knowledge of Buddha and aid and comfort all living beings. A lot more here, but I won't belabor the point. But I think that this is something not here in this quote in the Book of Serenity, but the basic plan here is to create a mutually beneficial situation. So we're not like practicing all this wisdom to like be above or apart from something, but it's to be fully engaged in a helpful way. Thus, we eat that stalk of vegetable, which is our life as it is, as it comes, as it thus comes, without separation, with inclusion of everything, so open borders. And this stalk is what nourishes. So that stalk, you know, enlightenment and our delusion are the same thing in this tasty stalk. And this is sort of the Suzuki Rishi calls them mind weeds, you know, pull them out, but they nourish the growth of compassion and benefiting the world. And if we eat that stalk of the Tathagata's words, I think in our everyday lives, joys and difficulties and our personal limitations don't bother us too much. maybe a little. They might bother us. But I think at that point, we have a chance of benefiting the world, a chance of acting in a way when we don't like our seats and we don't like who's sitting in some other seat, to actually care for the world. So, I mean, this is sort of one way that I would suggest practicing with these lovely stories handed down to us that can seem kind of impenetrable, but I think they're kind of talking about our everyday life. So thanks for sharing that stalk with me, this little appetizer. Taigen will, I'm sure, have a lot more to say about this case, because you could go on for... Good, you do a sashin on this case. Please. I might even come to it. Yes, it's possible. But I'd love to hear, like, your responses with this kind of practice, or to this practice, or to this situation, from your seat. So, thank you, Bodhisattvas.
Feel free to comment, responses, questions, whatever you think about this story and situation.
Yes, hi.
Thank you. The notion of sentience,
instead
of word,
yeah,
has always been peculiar.
Mm-hmm.
To what it is extended to and what maybe it is bound off from.
Yeah.
And the title of the book is Flower Sutra.
Flower ornament scripture sutra. Mm-hmm.
So the word flower seems separate and descriptive enough as it stands alone, but then the word ornament is that as well. So it's
I think everything is an ornament, and everything is a flower. But some of us like ornaments better than flowers, I guess. Yeah, please.
Following up on what you said about everything being sentient, I think in India and also in Tibetan Buddhism, only animals are considered sentient. As the question of what is sentient and what is or has or is Buddha nature, as I guess it was alluded to, all of reality is, in some sense, sentient, aware. So we can think about sentience as awareness, and you know, plants are aware of the light and the nutrition from the soil. They're aware in a different way than we are, of course. And you know, some native tribes, some native people think the rocks have consciousness. And that's kind of that idea. It developed in Dogen, who brought the tradition from China to Japan. It says all beings, all sentient beings in their wholeness through the nature. So that's one way to translate what he says. So that all things are alive and aware in some way. We can't necessarily.
I think the earth shows this to us. Like the earth is responding to us. And we will be responding to the earth at some point. Some of us are already.
And I've just always tossed it around my mind about not knowing whether it's really true or not. But the saying was, every good dog knows whether it's being tripped over or kicked. And it made me, this sort of coming to mind when we're talking about sentience, and the, you know, that all beings are endowed with the wisdom of the Tathagata, but because of our, you know, kind of delusions, we're sometimes, our eyes are clouded to it. So I don't know if I'm always a good dog, you know, knowing whether I'm being tripped over or kicked. But I think that speaks a little bit to, you know, kind of the ambiguous nature of reality. And so what is sentience? You know, when we recognize that everything is a little bit ambiguous and a little bit, you know, also being shaped by our response. You know, if we think that we've been tripped over, we might respond in a more forgiving kind of way than if we think we're being kicked. And that might shape, you know, an interaction too. So it's all for grabs.
Okay, just follow up with one comment. Sometimes I imagine that my awareness, as chaotic and indiscriminate as it can be, has a kind of dignity to it that assigns sentience to anything that I become aware of at the moment that I'm aware of. So I feel that a little bit as a kind of sentience.
So that. That's pretty deep. Honoring dignity, right? That's like valuing. And you notice like, oh, all of a sudden I become aware of that. Of, you know, of the, oh, I'm assigning dignity to that. So there's another side. And that's noticing when that doesn't happen. You know, that's a poignancy in our practice. But again, when you notice that gap, then all of a sudden, like, you're like, one minute, a little dignity, I can throw it in that direction too, perhaps, even if I got kicked. Might be a little harder, but that's where we start to practice. You notice the edge of it, so you pick up the edge. So thank you for that. Asian and whoever you are.
Any other comments or questions or responses?
Thank you for your talk. I have a total aversion to koans in practice. Every time I ever try to start, it's like
it's kind of slimy, right?
Yeah, slimy and gritty and just not cool. But the simplicity that you spoke about, like this formula of listen and practice and emulate, and I think especially the way that you framed it in such a positive, joyful sort of expression, sort of excited, maybe.
Yeah.
Come on, practice again.
What is once difficult in practice becomes a joy. So it's listen, remember, practice, transmit. But so you're just transmitting some joy in this direction as well. But you know, I always forget. Like, how is this happening after all these years of practices? Amnesia sets in almost instantaneously. Like, it's amazing to me. But there's always, like, you know, because there's this fundamental endowment with wisdom and virtue, like we always get a second chance to realize something that's always there anyway. It's like, oh, okay, wait a minute, I can remember. Thank you.
Just to add something about koans generally, which is, well, I guess I need to keep saying as I start talking about these books of replications, they are not riddles to solve or puzzles to figure out, or it's not about understanding them. They're stories that have been studied for 1,000 years because they, in some way, say something about what it's like to do, to be involved in a life of practice. And so, really, there's all the things that Hoketsu said about listening and emulating, but it's also just, how do you play with the story? And some koan stories may not feel that's so interesting to you, and some may be really right to the point of where your practice is tonight. So don't worry about understanding them. That's not the point at all. It's how you play with the possibilities that they bring forth.
I'll footnote your footnote.
Oh, good.
So, also, you're doing exactly the thing of, like, you're noticing your aversion to them. Then play with that. So it's not like everything we play with, we're like, oh, yeah, I want to play with, I want those seeds, you know. But then you start to play with your own hindrances, you know, capacity for trouble, resistance to love. And you're like, wow, I get to see that. Because we all have some good examples these days of people who don't see that. And I'm always happy to see the limitations of my karma. And sometimes you're just stuck with it. Sometimes you just sit with it like a rock, which is maybe better than acting it out.